Daryl Cross is the Vice President of Client Profitability for LexisNexis. In this position, he reviews the marketing efforts of many lawyers and law firms. After all, it's marketing and selling that creates the revenue from which profitability will result. Daryl discusses with Ed the differences between marketing and selling, and why lawyers either fear or hate to sell their professional services. Daryl and Ed also discuss several easy ways in which reluctant lawyers can be more effective and thus thrive in this downturned economy.
Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Ed. I appreciate the time to speak with you.
Now, one of the things that in your position, when you talk about client profitability, you also have to be involved with client acquisition. And in that regard, one of the questions that comes to mind is the difference between selling and marketing. And so what, from your experience and in your concepts, what's the difference between the two concepts? Most of us, like for Legal Marketing Association and the like, think in terms of marketing. Nobody that I know of has a legal selling association. So where do we come to selling versus marketing?
Well, it's interesting, Ed, just because of the fact that probably 10 years ago, even the concept of marketing was foreign to a lot of law firms. What we're trying to do is really try to further the business of the law firms, increase its profitability, its client share, get a strategic advantage over other firms by putting our message, putting our people, and really managing the reputation and expertise that we have in the market with new potential clients, as well as keep the ones that we already have and expand to them. So really what I've seen marketing do, when I'm talking about marketing in terms of mostly branding, communications, seminars, things like that, marketing is really about influencing opinion. And selling is more about influencing action. So selling is a much more active role and active discipline, and marketing is a bit of a more passive one, putting the message out there and hoping people kind of come to us, or when we go to sell to them for the first time, which is a face-to-face activity, that they've heard something about us before it occurs, before that sales meeting occurs. I find that most law firms are more comfortable with marketing because it is passive. It can be done by other people. If it can be done by the proxy of a marketing department, putting the message out in the market. But selling really requires that individual lawyer, that professional, to go out there, sit in front of a client or a potential client, and get them to say yes or no. And there's some natural discomfort, I think, that comes from that.
Well, you talk about a time frame of 10 years, and I know in 1995 I was successful in getting a registered mark for the phrase, the business of law. And not till then and subsequent to then did lawyers think of themselves as business people, let alone as marketers or even salespeople, worse. And so I understand what you're saying. And one of the differences between marketing and selling that I see in read between the lines of what you say is that the marketing is a more passive act and does not demand an immediate response from somebody, and selling, in a sense, commands or demands an immediate response or a prompt response. And what that involves is the potential of putting yourself on the line and being rejected. I know my wife was a salesperson for many years, and one of the things she used to tell me was that it takes about 10 contacts before the sale is made. So the first 9 are rejections in effect. And the really successful salesperson is the one who just views that next step as one step closer to that 10th call, which would be a yes. Is that how you see it?
I do. I do see it that way. I mean, when you look at most of the people that lawyers we talk to are engaged with, they're corporations, they're individuals, they already have some form of legal representation. They're conducting business, they're going about their day, they're running their company, and using a legal provider is something they do. Marketing, a lot of times, is really just putting out to the market that you're qualified. These are my qualifications and why you should hire me. And if we put out enough information in there, people will see that we're qualified, and, of course, will contact us. But the problem with that is a lot of these companies or individuals already have lawyers. So it's not a question of whether you're qualified, but why you should choose me over an existing provider or somebody else. And that's where selling comes into play, being able to talk specifically with a client or potential client about why, despite all of the options, you're all qualified, why you should choose one over another.
Well, that's an interesting concept, and I guess the question I would have is, do you have an answer for that? I know many clients perceive that every lawyer is equally as competent as the next. So how do you differentiate yourself? I mean, once you have the law school degree and you get the state bar to say you're licensed to practice, okay, now you're qualified. And, yeah, you may have a better website than another person, but basically you're qualified. How do you differentiate yourself from the next person?
Well, there's been a lot of talk in the legal industry and other industries, too, about the concept of value add. What kind of value-added services do you bring? And sometimes I think law firms mistakenly put, if I have more qualifications, that's the added value.
Mm-hmm.
But really what the added value to especially a corporate client or even an individual, depending on what they're looking for, is how will you make me a more profitable business? How you make me a more well-run business with less problems, less headaches to worry about? And so that's the value add people are looking for. And I think one of the keys then is how do you take your experience and expertise and translate that into this is how I can help your company run better and make more money, because ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what they're trying to do. That's why they're hiring legal providers, and it goes beyond the technical expertise of being able to complete a matter or a deal successfully. It's beyond that, the value add of how you can make myself or my business a more profitable enterprise.
And how do you do that before you actually get in there to do the work to be able to make that comparison?
Well, I think you hear from a lot of general counsel, for example, that they say they want people to know their business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more than just knowing a historical record of what happened or that the company has a certain amount of employees or sells certain products. You need to be able to look not 30 days into the past, which a lot of lawyers do because they're trained in precedent, but look 30 days into the future. What will impending changes in the law do to the way a company runs? What will changes in the industry? What will their competitors influence them to do? What will the emergence of a Chinese market in their industry do to their company? So lawyers have to be able to use competitive intelligence not just to look back in time, but also use their expertise and experience to make some sort of predictions about what could affect this company. But it really comes down to not knowing all the answers, but knowing how to ask clients or prospects the right questions, because they're the experts about their business. And once a lawyer can get a client to open up about what's going on in their industry and tell them their issues, only then does a lawyer know how to match their services to be able to help them achieve that.
Well, you know, I think that's fascinating, the idea of asking questions. Because, in effect, that's what we're taught in law school, is how to ask the questions. The right questions are more important than the right answers, in the sense that the answers are always in the law books, the minds of the expert witnesses, or otherwise available. But knowing the right question to ask is oftentimes key, and I think what you're saying is know the industry of the company and the client well enough, know the client well enough that you get some sense of what their issues might be, and then you just, if they're willing, enter into a dialogue with them, asking them questions and hearing what their responses are. The key there is just to listen to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, sometimes the asking questions part is where sometimes lawyers fall down when it comes to selling, because they're also trained, they want to be the smartest person in the room, and they want to know the answers to questions before they ask them. That's a standard thing people are trained. Never ask a witness on the stand a question you don't already know the answer to. And so lawyers sometimes will research companies to try to predict what the answers will be and know them in advance, and really it's just being able to ask the questions and get the client to open up. For example, if you are talking to a pharmaceutical client, you could do some research and know that a change in the law way back in the late 90s, the Hatch-Waxman Act, really opened up the door to authorized generics, which really disrupts the profitability and the time to market for new drugs. Well, you don't have to be an expert about that. What you need to be able to do is ask that question and have that client tell you, how did this affect your business? How do you think it will affect your business going forward? What changes have you made to address this? And when they open up with those answers, that's when you have those key moments to be able to insert where you can help this client.
And it's interesting, in my experience, once you start down that road of asking the questions, of listening carefully, and then taking it to the next step in terms of response, you don't have to have the answers as you suggest. You have to say, you know, our people can get the answers, or have you ever thought of this, that, or the other? And it's just a really interesting dialogue. And, of course, once you start that dialogue, they begin to trust you. And once they begin to trust you, they're going to begin to give you the business.
Yeah, and it also opens up the door to cross-selling if you have other colleagues at your firm or people that you can refer business to. Because, for example, if you were talking to your nursing home client and you're a healthcare attorney and you normally handle healthcare-related matters for them, but when you're talking to them about their business, they talk about, well, this new push in unionization for nursing homes is really killing us. Well, then you go back. You don't need to be an expert in unionization, but you do know that you can go back to your firm and find an expert that does. And that's value add, being able to take what that client has told you and bring them back a solution.
And even if you don't have that within your firm, if you know somebody who does that work, you can bring in another firm or another colleague and help them out. That's the key, sort of being the clearinghouse, if you will, of the client's problems. What, Daryl, can a lawyer do, assuming they're reluctant to embrace the phraseology selling? What can the lawyer, the reluctant lawyer, do to actually start selling and increase their book of business?
Well, probably the safest place that you can do is stick to what you know and stick to who you know. Probably the best place to sell are where your best relationships already lie. So for some firms, that is identifying who their top maybe 5 clients for an individual or 50 clients for a firm and really going and talking to them more about their business. Those people already know you, use you, and trust you. It's probably the easiest place to get business. After that, probably your most common referral sources. Who has sent you business? Other lawyers, but also other professional service firms. And go and talk to them about issues in the industries and maybe even clients that you could approach together. And we've even seen some firms go as far as to find their old alumni, people that used to work at their firms and are now maybe in-house at a company, and go talk to them. These are all existing relationships where you can feel comfortable sitting down and not only possibly getting opportunities, but it's a great place to learn how to sell in front of a friendly audience.
It's always nice to do it in front of a friendly audience.
Absolutely.
What's the biggest mistake lawyers make when selling? I know we talked a moment ago about being with or in front of a friendly audience. One of the things that I found is, as a speaker before somewhat large groups, is that the audience is always pulling for you. You know, unless there's some reason they don't like you, and if that's the case, they're not going to be there. But if they're there, they like you. They want you to succeed. So assuming that as a starting point, what is it that the lawyers do to turn their audience or their prospect off? What's their mistakes?
Probably the biggest thing I've seen consistently is making it all about them, that thinking this is an opportunity to declare their expertise and experience, and therefore naturally they should have no other choice but to hire them. So if you think about it in a bit of a metaphor, what if people dated in that fashion? It's the way meeting someone for the first time on a date, and you did nothing but talk about yourself the entire time, all your great accomplishments, how all the women or men always love you and have always enjoyed dates with you, and that's why you should too. You'd either get laughed at or a drink thrown in your face, and that's how most people sell in the legal industry. It really is talking about what's going on in their business, what has been their experience, What are their challenges to expanding? Because know that their current law firm or lawyer is not helping them do this. That's why they still have challenges. And that is really the pain that you're trying to discover. So really, don't make this a way to go over your resume with somebody. Make it something to go over what their company wants to do and then match your talents to that.
It was interesting because I listened to a story told by one individual who said that he is a recluse, but he was forced to go to this party. And the hostess came up to him and started talking with him, and he would nod, and he would say, "And what was that?" And, you know, a couple of questions interspersed here and there. But she did 95% of the talking. And when her husband came over to save my friend from his wife, she said to him how great a conversationalist my friend was. And he hardly said anything, according to him. So it is about the other party. It is not about you.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you hear the same kind of suggestion when it comes to giving speeches, with selling, with doing interviews or whatever. If you listen to what the other person says, like think about an interview. If you listen to what the other person says and ask them questions, let them talk. Frequently when you talk to people afterwards, their impression of you is, I really like that person. They seem to know what they're talking about. And it's because the other person was talking the whole time. So there's nothing to disagree with. So it really is just a key way that how humans interact with each other.
It's amazing.
Talk about themselves.
It's amazing because you talk about the interview, and I remember a specific interview that I had when I was hired as an associate many years ago. And I swear I hardly said anything except to inquire about the firm and some of their policies, and the managing partner did most of the talking, and I was hired almost instantly.
Yeah, but people aren't bringing you in for you to impress them. They want you to be able to infer what's going on in their business. And through just an analytical process of researching before, not learning the answers, but learning the best questions, and also knowing how to be quiet and listen is a key skill, not just for any lawyer, but any person trying to sell any service or sell their point of view.
Well, all right. We've spoken about some of the mistakes. Let's talk on the positive side. What is it that the most successful rainmaking lawyers have in common that you've seen? I mean, in your position, you travel around the country, if not the world, and you've talked to many, many lawyers, both in small firms and large. What are the really successful folks doing out there?
Well, when it comes right down to it, this is a relationship business and a client service business. So what are the best rainmakers doing? They're really paying attention to that. They try to not only meet with their clients and find out what they're doing, but they also find ways to get them business. They will take their common clients that might do business with each other and broker that relationship with each other. You only get that after asking your client questions of what kind of business they're looking for, but they can broker their own relationships to get their clients talking to each other. They also leverage their existing assets as best they can. They go into the finance department of their firms. They find who their most profitable clients are, where we've had the most success, and they either try to develop that further or clone those clients, find other ones with similar characteristics. It really is a question of focus, not getting our name out there to millions of potential clients, but maybe finding 20 or 30 where we've been successful before, expanding them, and then finding 20 or 30 that look like them to possibly get new business from. It's really making the world small enough for a lawyer that's trying to build 2,000 hours a year to get more time and more results from that small period of time. So the best rainmakers really stick to what and who they know. They focus, focus, focus. And a lot of time, that is where lawyers fall apart, when you only have 2 or 3 hours a week to devote to marketing development.
Okay. The next question, perhaps the last one for today, and that is, is selling an option? In other words, we talk about marketing. We understand what that is. You do that by writing, by speaking and other avenues that are available to us, and that tends to be more passive, especially if it's done by a marketing department or a PR person on your behalf. We talk about selling that it requires action, but is that really mandatory? Or is selling optional?
Well, I'm a very firm believer that everybody is selling every day. Just some lawyers and some professionals are doing a very bad job at it. It's either completely unmanaged and they're waiting for the phone to ring, or they're going out into the market and just doing it the wrong way, but everybody is selling. That Class A office space you have, that's selling the prestige of your firm, the rates that you charge really puts out into the market what kind of quality work you do, the type of people that you hire, what do people look like when they go meet with a client, how well are they prepared, how proactive are they, how much do they make sure their clients are getting everything from their bills to the way the matters are presented to maybe the after-matter follow-up. Some people just choose to let those things fall where they may. Other ones, rainmakers, get a process to it, and they start making action statements of what they're going to try to achieve. So people can say selling is optional, but it's really not. You're selling every day whether you want to or not. Some just are doing it very badly, and some are doing it very well.
Well, Daryl, I want to thank you for joining us today. I concur with everything you've said. I also agree that it's not a question of whether we want to sell, but whether we do it well or poorly. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate the time today.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.